Chapter 6. During his novitiate, his regularity and obedience, his fervor and recollection, his austerities and penances, were a fountain of edification to all in the house. Once his humility and prudence were severely tested in a crisis which novices can rarely, if ever, meet without some imperfection. He was with a father of the order who behaved somewhat carelessly in the presence of seculars. John and Matthias was the only religious who saw the fault committed. The historians have said it was not a serious fault, but merely unbecoming in a Carmelite. The novice reminded the father of his fault, and he did so with so much humility and discretion that the father not only was not offended, but, on the contrary, he corrected himself and accepted the correction with joy. In the following year, in 1564, John made his profession before Fra Angel de Salazar, the provincial of Castile. His great protector, Don Alonso Alvarez, was present at the ceremony. The record of his profession, signed by the saint, was preserved in the house as a precious relic. A special book, very richly bound, was made to keep it, and also a very precious casket was made for it. This document, and the small cell in which our saint lived, converted into a chapel after his death, were kept in great veneration in that monastery, though the monastery itself never adopted the reform of St. Teresa. But the house ever afterwards retained traces of the saintly novice, John of St. Matthias, in the regular observance and edifying punctuality of the community in all its duties. Seeing himself now a child of religion, whose mother and protector was the Most Holy Mother of God, from whom he had received great favors, he found it hard to satisfy his fervor of gratitude towards God and the Mother of Carmel. Therefore, he began to consider anew the obligation of his state. Giving continual thanks to God for having brought him into the safe sanctuary of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, his first care was to study carefully the rule of his order with the purpose of keeping it perfectly. He found that the order, though professing the rule given to St. Albert, Patriarch of Jerusalem, was not conformed to the rule as it was given to the ancient Carmelites, nor as it was approved by Innocent IV, but lived according to the mitigated rule approved by Eugenius IV, who had dispensed with its chief rigors and most heroic observances. Discovering all these things, he procured the rule in its primitive form, and, reading it carefully, he was inspired with an ardent desire of observing it in all its points. But being a child of obedience, he would do nothing of his own will. He had at once given his will to his superiors, and would never resume it again. However, he could represent his wishes to them, and did so. They listened to him, perhaps with some misgiving, but they did not resist, lest they should put out a flame which our Lord had kindled. They gave him permission to observe the primitive rule, provided that no duty of the community be neglected, and the present discipline of the house be maintained in everything. He entered now on a life of penance, which, under existing conditions, was much more severe than the primitive rule required. He was present at all the exercises of the community, in choir, chapter, and refectory, avoiding all appearance of singularity, and outwardly differing in nothing from the friars of the house. Yet he was fasting from the feasts of the Holy Cross in September till Easter in the following year, and abstaining wholly from flesh meat throughout the year, according to the primitive rule. But as no special provision was made for him in the house, and he attended daily in the refectory where meat was served according to the dispensation of Eugenius IV, it was hard for him to disguise his own mortification and at the same time find food enough to support life. He had nothing in his cell, and he would not eat except at the appointed hours. He kept silence also, according to the primitive rule, and for that purpose used to retire to his cell the moment he was free from the duties he had to discharge in public. He labored also with his hands, as the ancient hermits did, making in his cell crosses, disciplines, and other instruments of penance. But his chief work was prayer, which is the true work of a friar of Carmel, for it is said in the rule, "Let all remain in their cells, or near them, meditating night and day in the law of the Lord." He loved his holy exercise more than all the rest, and it struck down into his heart very deep roots, producing the most excellent fruits of high contemplation and heroic sanctity. Nor did he forget the holy poverty recommended by the rule, and therefore he did not admit to his cell, bed, or dress anything which was not absolutely necessary for the use of human life, and the decency of the religious state. He procured a narrow, incommodious, and poor cell, an old patched habit, and everything else in his personal use showed poverty and humility.